Welcome back to the Babylon Podcast. I am Tim Callender.
I am Jeremy Heide.
And I'm Mike Diamond, also known as Storm Knight on the web here.
Yes, and we are still summerless because she's doing super secret summer stuff that summer does. So watch out for the awesome.
Related to ninjas, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I probably.
Now you had to mention it. I think there are half a dozen hiding in the room here.
Don't look. Don't look.
Damn! Sorry.
Hey, if anybody's an Adventure Time fan out there, I hope you've seen the episode Cave of Frozen Daggers, which is their sort of ninja episode, which was a ton of fun. Finn and Jake are ninjas, and they find out that the Ice King is a ninja fan, too, and they find his secret stash of all his ice ninja stuff. Tons of fun. Okay, anyways, hey, before we get leaping back into the rest of the feedback-a-palooza we got going on here, as everybody is no doubt aware by now, there is a little project DC's putting out this summer called Before Watchmen, which is seven, eight different books that are prequels to Alan Moore's Watchmen series, and it's gotten a lot of discussion, shall we say, on the inner tubes about whether or not this is a good idea, and it's very polarizing for fans. So anyways, doing a little digging around, I came across a interview on Newsarama.com. And I'll try to get a link up on the website. And this comes to us back in mid-March 2012, where they're talking with JMS about the project, and he is writing the Dr. Manhattan and Night Owl series. And, of course, the conversation comes up about the whole idea that, you know, Alan Moore – the whole thing is well worth reading, I should say that. But you know, it comes, you know, they of course breach the idea that Alan Moore is adamantly opposed to them doing this kind of thing, you know, doing the prequels, and he's very upset about it, and that's what's got some other people riled up about it. But so in the interview, they get around to talking about that naturally. Newsarama interviewer ask, and I'm going to kind of summarize through here because I thought this was very interesting. The question is, much has been said about why you and the other Before Watchmen creators believe it's not disrespectful move forward with this prequel despite Alan Moore's repeated objections. How would you sum up that argument? And has the thought of Babylon 5 getting a prequel without your blessings changed your mind at all? And Straczynski replies, you have to compare this apples to apples if you want to bring B5 into it. It isn't a matter of DC doing Watchmen when Alan wants it and wants to do it. He's chosen not to engage, even when DC offered him ownership of the characters and even when they would cut him a check enough to dim the lights of DC for several weeks. If Warners wanted to do a B5 prequel and I said no, if they offered me all the money in the world and a big budget and I said no, if they offered me total creative freedom and ownership of the show and lock, stock, and phased plasma pistols, and I said no, if they waited 25 years for me to change my mind and I still didn't want to do it, then they'd be absolutely right to proceed without me because I had opted to take myself out of that process. Me, I'd love to do more B5 one day, and Warners knows that and would love to have me involved. They've made that very clear, and in fact, we almost had such a deal about a year ago. Big budget for a reboot of the series, a full season order, and total creative control when the new distribution system WB had hinged the deal upon fell apart at the last minute. So I thought that was very interesting.
I agree totally. I mean, it's,
yeah,
you know, he was given the opportunity more than once. You know, what can you do? It's a creative property at that point, and yep, they have the right to do it.
I mean, right. They have the keys to the door here. I mean.
Right, exactly.
And a little further in, because one of the things that keeps coming around is the quote unquote the lousy contract that Alan Moore had signed to get that he signed for production of Watchmen. This is what JMS says about it. He says, if it's ultimately a matter of his feeling that he got screwed by DC, you know, since you bring it up, I also got screwed on my contract for B5. I've never received a penny in profits from that show and never ever will. But it was the best contract I could negotiate at the time.
Wow. I did not know that. That, yeah. That's pretty amazing.
Oh, man.
That sheds a whole new light on everything yeah, that he's right. done since then.
Right. Right.
Wow. And, you know, it doesn't surprise me with Warners. I mean,
right.
I was watching on PBS about Warners and crazy stuff.
And again, here's a little bit more and then we'll move on. But he says, JMS says, everyone in the entertainment business gets crappy contracts when we start out and into the middle of our careers. It's the nature of the business. You incrementally improve your deal over time, which is why even though I had a crappy B5 contract, I continue to work with Warners knowing that each new step I would improve my deal until now. It's pretty much at the top of what the industry can offer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I can see that.
Yeah.
So now it's time for him and Joss to get together and do something.
That, would be pretty awesome.
Because they have similar backgrounds in their shows teetering on the edge of abyss.
Yeah.
And, you know, they could have a drink and write an awesome show.
Sure, and set records for quickest cancellation.
Right.
I don't know, since we're going to be cynical and...
Well, might as well do it on the CW. We'll give them a chance to...
get them together, write Avengers 2. It's going to be awesome, and then it's going to be interrupted in the middle of things.
Yeah.
Stanley comes out. Sorry, we didn't have enough plot for the rest of the movie. Good night.
See you next year.
All right. Any other further things to open with here, gentlemen?
No, I think that's it.
All right. Well, why don't we go ahead and take a quick break and then leap right back into it with our Feedback on Palooza part second. B.
Do.
Isn't it time that you got away from it all? Now that the Shadow Wars have ended, the planet Zaha Doom has undergone a huge renovation and has become the playground of the galaxy. We invite you to come see our new massive casinos, our five-star restaurants, luxurious spas, and the finest entertainment in this sector. Come see the masterful technomages Galen and Roy as they dazzle your eyes with the multicolored light spectacular. Come see the original music performances of the Pandorian Blue Man Group, or cross the street and see the original music performances of the Andorian Blue Man Group. And of course, you can still catch Cirque du Soleil. The White Star Cruisers are waiting to take you on the vacation of your dreams. Zaha Doom. No one leaves the same as they arrive.
And we are back for more feedback. Okay, Jeremy, bring it on.
All right. Just so everybody knows, this is all Neil all the time.
Okay.
Here we go.
Hello, this is Neil from Bowie. Still listening to this show 259 about the Legend of the Rangers and Tim's point that, you know, bad idea of having a single person in charge of the weapon system, and, you know, the only thing that... you can say about that is single point failure. That's all.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, the whole idea of the main weapons officer suspended in a zero-gravity chamber punching at air. Kind of fun to watch with the fan service flipping around like that, but... yeah, it just sounds... It's this point for fail.
Yeah, you know, well, as I recall reading in one of the, I don't know if it was Crusade, What the Hell Happened, one of the recent books that came out, it was like what they had originally planned was either running over budget or not ready for shooting. And so
yeah,
they sort of made a like on-the-spot decision. Okay, this is what we're going to do.
You know,
and
it's not even the fact that with the punching in it was the acting that was done. Level of overacting on that was just because I can imagine it, you know, being something like you could see with a Kinect today, you know, something with all that. But the overacting was just kind of over the top.
Well, and the one scene where she's letting loose with every weapon.
Yeah, it's just the super attack or whatever that is.
Yeah. It's like,
it's kind of, I mean.
It's no Hadouken, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely not Matrix Bullet Time.
And more to the point, it's the kind of thing that it's like if you're trying to get somebody hooked, you know, this JMS guy, he writes these really intelligent scripts and here's his new show. And then, you know, your friend sees this girl kind of flailing around in front of green screen stuff. You just kind of go, oh.
What would have been better, her flailing around? Or if you imagine like maybe she comes into a pose, some sort of meditative pose, and then starts glowing, and then all these shots shoot off into the space. Wouldn't that have been much cooler than just the flailing around?
Yes.
I would like to see it linked. I would have mind seeing it linked to the navigation system, so as she does the flips of bullet time from the Matrix here, the total ship kind of maneuvers out of the way.
Oh, sure. So she was like in charge of evasive maneuvers. Just simply punching at everything.
Yeah.
That would be an interesting concept.
Yeah.
Well, I think Jeremy, your idea is an interesting one because then you've got the what's the word I want? The juxtaposition of the still meditative individual shooting off the high energy kinetic weapons. Yeah, whatever.
There's a lot of ways they could have made that better. There's a lot of ways they could have made it better.
I know gung fu.
All right, let's go to the next one.
Yeah.
Hello, this is Neil from Bowie listening to show 259 still. Summer just asked about whether Legend of the Rangers or Lost Tales had a higher budget, and I agree with him that Legend of the Rangers must have had a higher budget. Now, what I'm curious about is the difference in budget possibly between Legend of the Rangers and A Call to Arms. Would be interesting to know about how different those are. I can't imagine that this had a higher budget than A Call to Arms, but anyway, be interested in that.
No, I think it was pretty apparent that it was a much lower budget than what was on Call to Arms. Actually, you know what I think would be interesting to know, because here's the difference. Because as we discussed last time, Call to Arms was a pilot for a show that had already been bought and in production.
Yep.
So how, you know, those kinds of sets, knowing that it was going to a series like it already done, they probably had a lot of money dumped into the sets and try to amortize that over the cost of the series.
Yeah, they do the JMS thing, where he can make it work on budget all the time.
Right, whereas I don't know that they had necessarily had that same sort of luxury on Legend of the Rangers. And it kind of makes you wonder whether the concept of a tatty old ship was as much a production consideration as a storytelling device.
This was pretty easy.
Yeah.
Hello, this is Neil from Bowie, listening to show 259. At the beginning of the show, there was a discussion about before Watchmen comics, and those comics are in the previews magazine for ordering comics in April. So in a few short months, The first issue should be in comic book stores and so forth. So I'll be placing my order sometime in the next week for seeing those in a couple months from now. So it'll be interesting to see what actually comes in those. But the bits that they're showing in previews look interesting. That's all.
You know, the more I read about before... about the Before Watchmen project, this is probably one of the most hotly debated topics.
Polarizing.
Polarizing, oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was just like clicking through here, and here's an opinion piece on Comics Alliance told that's titled "The Ethical Rot Behind Before Watchmen and the Avengers." Hmm. And I haven't really read the piece, so I can't comment on it.
Well, I mean, it's easy to see from both sides. You know, I can understand where you want to keep your intellectual property rights, but I can also understand where when you're given that much chance to do it, what can they do?
And it also gets back to that ugly discussion of creators' rights and all that, you know? And I hate to say it, but when you sign a contract, you know, unless you've got a really, really good lawyer.
Well, like you're saying, just what JMS said, you know, he signed the contract and honored the contract and he got crap out of it. But he knew it was evolving his career, his ability to do what he wants to do in the future. So sometimes you give away things to get things later. I mean, that's just how contracts work.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Someone has a goal and they want to try to just go for it. And if they have to do something else along the way, so be it.
Exactly. You know, that's just how it works.
Yeah.
You got to play the game or not, I guess.
This is Alfred Bowie. Just finished listening to show 259 with the discussion of Legend of the Rangers. And the biggest surprise out of that whole podcast is that no one said, "Talk to the Hand."
We saved it for you, Neil.
Oh,
that was horrible.
Oh,
that is one expression
that was a head dust
would just disappear from our lexicon.
Okay. Yeah. Next.
You know, since we're not talking about the foot and you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, so let's go on to the next one.
Yeah.
Hello, this is Neil from Bowie, listening to show 260, first of the seventh season of the podcast. Great to hear the new opening theme there. That's lots of fun there. In Summer's list of various things that you might be going over in future podcasts, one thing I did not hear her mention are the official Babylon 5 magazine. So, that might be worth an episode just going over some of the supplementary material, interesting interviews and so forth, stuff that could be found in those magazines. There was a lot of good stuff in there, and it probably deserves being discussed at one time. That's all.
You know what? I'd love to have that discussion, but I don't own any of the magazines.
I don't either.
I have nothing, unless there's a torrent out there with a PDF, I mean.
Yeah. I think that's one of those. I'm such a bad fan, I guess, because, man, when it comes to a lot of the collectible stuff.
I didn't know that stuff was out there. If I'd have known that was out there, I would have grabbed onto it, but I never saw it. If I'd have seen it on the newsstand one time, that would have made a difference, but I wasn't lucky enough to see it, I guess.
I mean, for me as a fan, it was most of the Babylon 5 was in the meanings of what was being presented on the show, not the collection of stuff. So right. I don't have much myself here. So
yeah,
I mean,
so anybody out there who wants to talk about the magazines,
or if they want to, you know, if they have the magazines and want to let us read them and we can send them back or something like that, I'm up for that. I'll pay the shipping back or both
there you
ways
go.
Even,
right.
You know.
So there we are. Send an email in and we'll get you hooked up so you can talk with us about it. Because we like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's all so good.
Yeah, it's all good.
Okay.
What's next?
I think we ought to take a quick
time?
Break. Yep.
Right.
And,
okay.
And then we'll jump right back in.
Looking forward to that.
For freedom!
For freedom! For peace!
against those who would see such liberty stolen from my people. That is my purpose on Babylon 5.
He stands for honor, justice, and hope. In a world where empires rise and fall with each new day. Watch Jakar on Babylon 5, exclusively on TNT.
And we are back. And we've got some more feedback, Palooza, to Paloozize you with.
Paloozize.
Yeah, Paloozate.
We've been paloozed.
Palization. All right, here we go.
Okay.
Hello, this is Never Boy listening to Show 260, Lost Tales Revisited, the first show, and I just have to wonder with the discussion about the, you know, telepath or not, and whether that was the answer to that. I just, you know, next time you interview JMS, maybe that's a thought to ask him that. Somebody has already asked him about that at some point. I don't know. Take a look at the website, JMS News website, see what JMS actually said about the episode. I wonder if there's anything in questions and answers about that. Just wanted to mention that.
All right. Well, I'll be honest with you. I think we had our JMS interview, unless something really super major comes along and we are of interest. I think we had our shot. And it wasn't enough to win a Parsec, damn it. Oh, whoops.
Darn it.
That was the outside voice, too.
Which firstborn would we have to sacrifice to get him back on the podcast?
Oh, I've already mine has got two or three claims on him, so I don't know.
No, I think we could probably get away with just a couple limbs, you know, in a box, nice pretty box with some flowers.
Go to Gary Larson's butcher shop. Yeah, I don't know. I could sell the kid for $2.99 a pound.
It's all about presentation.
Yeah. Little plastic grass from sushi bars.
Hello, this is everybody. I just finished listening to Show 260, including the bonus track at the end of the podcast, which was a nice surprise, talking about the haunted Lost Tales and the beginning of the seventh season of Babylon Podcast. Anyway, nice treat, and looking forward to more. That's all.
Thanks, yeah. Well, Summer has a great way of knowing what you guys really want. Me, I'm just a schmo. I just show up here every couple weeks and talk a lot.
Well, you gotta have filler.
Yeah, right. Yes, but when it's all filler, that's when you really got a problem.
I'm just onion rings and a liver of life right now here. So.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Liver's gross.
Okay,
unless it's Braunschweiger, and that's pretty good. A little bit of lettuce and some mayonnaise.
Any Weird Al fans here?
Oh, love Weird Al.
Have you heard his song "Trapped in the Drive-Thru"?
It's a
parody of "Trapped in the Closet."
Nope.
And so it's basically the song of he and his this long interminable song about he and his wife trying to determine what they're going to have for dinner and end up driving to the drive-thru. But at one point, you know, there's the dialogue, and I won't sing it for you but you got to hear it. But it's like, you know, I jumped up and said, "I don't know. Do you want to have something delivered?" She says, "Why would I want to eat liver? I don't even like liver." No, I said delivered. I heard you say liver. Yeah.
That's why we really have rules.
Yeah. That's exactly right. Yes.
That and the polka.
Yeah,
oh, the polkas are astounding. They are amazing.
He's brought it back to life.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. That's what we need to do. We need to get Weird Al to do a B5 polka.
Yes.
That would be awesome.
Oh, dear.
Can you imagine the theme from the Battle of the Line as a played on the accordion?
Yeah. All right. Yeah, somebody's got to get us Weird Al's contact info.
JMS says he told Christopher Franke, make me cry. Well, I'm sure this would make him cry, too.
Make me cry in a funny way.
Yeah, right.
God, I just keep thinking of Lederhosen and shower curtains. That's the realm.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He would definitely be. He would definitely be there. He would definitely be a Vorlon.
Oh, that's hysterical. All right, what's next?
We have no idea. Let's see what we have next.
Hello, this is Neil from Bowie Looking Show 261, feedback show, and Tim just read Joe's thoughts about Gideon dying and such, and I agree with Summer and Tim and Brett that I think Gideon was around for the long haul. And would have liked to see that, and the all the speculation about the Apocalypse Fox and what that is would have been interesting as well. And I think Joe should just write a book, give us a novel telling us what was going on with Crusade. I want that information. That's all.
I would buy that book.
Yeah, I think a lot of people.
That series.
You know what? It occurred to me as Neil was saying that, I think that
Crusade should be an awesome comic book.
I think JMS. Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Which gets back to that point, because what I was going to say is, I think if JMS wanted to be a novelist, he would have done it by now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I know he's written a couple books, but really his focus is script writing.
He's good at it.
Yeah, well, but it's also script writing is writing for visual media.
Yes, you have to make your thoughts into what you see. That's different.
Right. Well, but it also becomes a more collaborative process. You know, okay, so JMS, you know, he creates the concepts of the Rangers. He creates the concepts of the Minbari and the Excalibur. But what do they actually look like? And what do those characters physically look like? You know, you can sort of describe, okay, you know, Commander Jeffrey Sinclair is a quiet man raised by Jesuits, but what does he look like? Okay, well, you find the actor. So I wonder if that's just if you know, I wonder if that's what gravitates him toward. And this is all speculation. I don't know, and I've never really seen him say anything about it. But I wonder if that's why he gravitates to those media, to the comics, where you've got illustrations, to film, where you've got
where you can show pictures. What you.
Yeah, I mean. How about I'm going to get my anime background to it. Why not an animated series? I mean, like a nice epic thing like Babylon 5. I mean, it solved the special effects issue.
Yeah, I've been thinking that for a while. Why not take it straight to animation? You know, we're going to have some voices that aren't going to be there. And, you know, I understand that. But, boy, there's so much they could do with it. And the story they could fill out so much.
Yeah.
And what you're getting in animation anymore these days,
Final Fantasy, the enemy within or the spirits within. I mean,
I think what they're doing over on Clone Wars, as stylized as that is, it fits perfectly with the kinds of stories they're telling, and the stories are very compelling stories. It's very impressive what they're doing on that show. Yeah. And it's the best Star Wars that's been done in the last 15 years.
Yeah, since the original.
Right.
Pretty much.
Exactly, yes.
I mean, it's almost as good as the Christmas special, but, you know, that's a high bar to set.
It's the holiday special, by the way. They never
mentioned Christmas. I'm sorry.
And it was, and if I recall right, I think it was actually aired around Thanksgiving time.
Yeah, it was.
Frankly, the holiday they are really celebrating is Life Day. in which Chewbacca looks like Jesus in his robe. Big, hairy, 7-foot-tall Jesus.
I had a friend of mine expose his 5-year-old son to that show.
It is the most awesome slice of horrible ever. You know what my favorite...
I'm like, why didn't you scar him like that?
You know what my favorite part in that whole show is? Is the scene where Princess Leia calls up to Chewie's wife, Mala, and she's trying to talk to her, and Mala's grunting back in Wookiees or whatever, and she finally goes, is there somebody else there I can talk to?
Yep.
Yeah.
Where did my friend go wrong?
Brilliant stuff.
Oh,
I showed it to her. I gave my copy of my DVD to a friend. He couldn't sit through it.
I said, no. He wasn't found later with his guts spilled on the floor and a sword up in his liver.
No, he was expecting, dancing stormtroopers and all that, like your traditional holiday fare. And he was
hello,
just,
my baby.
Just
came, hello, my honey.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And that's what he was like. And
right.
He comes back and he goes, 15 minutes of them. Thing, and that's
sorry,
all I can handle.
That would have been Warner Brothers.
Yeah, right.
The frog is owned by Warner Brothers.
He is.
Yes.
All right. Well, there's that tangent.
back on the Tangent Express, I see.
All right, here we go.
Well, this is Neil from Boy looking at show 262 at the point where there was a nice breakup. There, while speculating on the new book series, which has turned into echoes of our conversations, and at that point, Summer was saying we need to get Jason Davis on the podcast again. So, anyway, just a reminder, let's get Jason Davis on the podcast again. Even though we've already seen the first two of those out by now, be good to hear some more about the series and. Anything coming up later, if he can possibly tell. That's all.
Oh, we'd love to have the Jason Davis back on. I think I upset him, though. Oh. I think somewhere down the line I don't know, I did something. I'm not saying he's being petty or anything. I think I made a misstep and we're paying the price. So there. It's all my fault.
Well, maybe we should try to reconnect.
Maybe we should. Maybe we should reach out.
Because, that's going on. The series is going on while we're doing this. So.
Yeah, yeah.
And those aren't cheap books, by the way.
No, they're not.
But I seriously want them. That information is, that's real life, and I'd like to have that.
I think if I could find some good quote from Dylan to share with him, maybe that would...
Could always make everything better, couldn't she?
Yeah. Oh my God, I was looking at the Mira Furlan website, her official website, and she has one of the clips posted of her B5 days is the one where since Ship of Tears, where she goes to tell Jakar that, basically they knew the whole time that the shadows were moving and they were willingly sacrificed Narn to buy themselves time. And oh my God, just that 3 minutes of that was enough to get the floodgates opening. It was amazing.
Yeah, I can see that.
So sniff, see if I could find just one of those things like that to tell Jason, then Maybe he'll come back on the show. Of course, he might also be sitting there going, why haven't you guys sent me an email saying, come back on the show?
Yeah, I've been working all this time. And
yeah, right. Just... Well, what's the problem with you guys?
Yes, we should do that. We'll put that on the list, and we will try to get a hold of Jason.
There we go. Okay. Next.
Well, this is the last.
Ooh.
So it's long.
This is Neil from Bowie listening to the show 262, and Summer talking about NBC Universal doing it right with Miami Vice. Well, of course, the series that they did it wrong with was Quantum Leap, which they they did the first season, which is a short season, they put out there, and it was a really expensive set for the number of episodes. And that first season, I think, had all the music. And then it was priced at that price, you know, knowing that the next other seasons would be the same price. And then they came out with the same price, but they didn't have the original music. And I think the sales suffer from that. I know I didn't buy the other seasons. I know a lot of people went and got the other seasons from Europe, which had the original music. So that was a number of years back, case where they completely messed up with getting the original music. And there was, you know, many episodes where the music was a key plot point in that show, and they get completely messed up. So that's one of the tragedies, so to speak, in DVD releases in the past. That's all.
That's why you need to get people to write your own music.
You know that, yeah, it makes us happy that we had somebody that wrote real music every episode, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't have to rely on, I don't know, Phil Collins' latest hit.
Yeah.
Well, it's not fair to pick on Phil Collins.
No, it's always fair to pick on Phil Collins. Are you kidding? Ugh, Phil Collins.
He didn't have an whole orchestra behind him either, so.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, so you say that's the end of the...
That is the end of Neelapalooza, which is the second part of our Feedbackapalooza.
I have some emails here real quick. Do we need to take a break and come back?
Yeah, we should go ahead and do a quick break, and then we'll come back and we'll hit that.
Excellent.
In a world gone mad, one family must face the ultimate danger. On the run from a madman, they face a perilous crossing that could cost them all their lives.
What the hell is this? The traffic is going every direction. What kind of freeway is this?
14 lanes of speeding vehicle madness, and they only have minutes to make it to the other side alive.
Oh, Sally, stick close to Daddy and keep an eye out for those semis.
This is insane! They just keep coming! Faster and faster!
Oh, God, Sally, look out for the Mercedes!
Look, we've almost made it halfway!
Just when things were looking up, a new terror arises.
What the f***? There's a river in the middle of a freeway?
This is madness! How can there be a river?
Coming this summer to a theater near you, a new terror in movie madness. Frogger, the movie.
Sally! The log is rolling! Jump on the turtle! Sally!
Just when you thought it was safe to cross the street. SliceOfSciFi.com.
Okay, here we are. We're back. Got some emails here to knock out. First one comes to us from David McMillan, and he is responding to our comments regarding ramming speed in the Legend of the Rangers discussion. He says two things. First, velocity is a vector quantity, not scalar. Second, the relative speed is what matters. Regarding vectors, how fast two ships are going doesn't matter if their courses don't intersect. Ramming speed, as used in the B5 universe, is effectively shorthand for redline the engines, put on an intersecting vector with that guy, and keep us on it while he tries to evade. Regarding relative velocity, if two ships are traveling in the same direction, one at 2,000 kilometers per hour and the other at 2,001 kilometers per hour, and they collide, they won't do more than swap paint because that's the same situation as one ship sitting stationary and the other moving at 1 kph. On the other hand, if they are traveling in opposite directions at those speeds, it's the same as one ship being stationary and the other moving at 4,001 kilometers per hour. So basically, how fast they're going doesn't matter. It's their relative velocity and direction that controls whether two ships connect gently or collide violently. Otherwise, it wouldn't be possible to dock shuttles or Soyuz or Dragons, crossed fingers, to the ISS, even though in that scenario, both vessels are moving at roughly 7.7 kilometers per second relative to the Earth. The critical factor is that the difference in their orbital velocity and direction amounts to mere inches per minute. Good points, David. I think the thing that I come away most of all with that is the idea of ramming speed as shorthand command.
Yeah. Full speed at that vector.
Ramming speed. Full water skiing speed.
Point that direction. Hit it.
But you know what? What he's saying is that it might be better to go in front of them and stop and let them hit you, as opposed to hitting them on the broadside or at an angle. It might be better to overtake them and stop, and then the energy would...
Right. Well, that also assumes, though, that you can anticipate what their vectors are going to be as they commit evasive maneuvers.
Right. Well, I was assuming it was going to be on a dice roll, but...
That's true. And you've also got to factor in, character attributes, whether or not they've got piloting skills.
Right. And you got to take crit into effect. So.
Precisely. Right. Are we rolling six-siders like in Traveler, or are we using 20-sided like in GURPS?
I was
just going to break out the B5 Wars and see where we're going from there.
That'll be another point. That's another thing that I never...
I actually got to play that a couple of times.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
A friend of mine picked it up here, and we were... And it's just... Yeah. It takes a little bit of effort to put together the scenarios and so on, but it was kind of fun at the time.
Oh.
So.
All right. Okay. Next questions here comes to us from Nan Bailey again. She writes... Did anyone else wonder why, and here she's talking about our conversations about Lost Tales. Did anyone else wonder why Earth was a target and not the Interstellar Alliance? Wouldn't the Alliance be more of a threat to Centauri than that single member planet?
I would think that was just that's where the UN was. It was the same thing, that's... You would take out where the UN was.
I thought the UN. I thought the center for the Alliance was on Minbar.
Yes, exactly. I think it's more of a symbolic attack. I.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess.
Well, the Alliance is, I think, might be the bigger of the two major founders of the Alliance between Minbar and Earth.
I assume that it was the they started it, so, you take it out kind of thing. Maybe not.
Well, that gets back to the whole point. There was clearly a bigger story that would have played in subsequent Lost Tales releases.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really the long and the short of it. And JMS in an interview sort of alluded as such. Yeah, I recall reading, and I wish I could remember where, was an online source where he talks about, like many things that we that happened in the Babylon 5 universe, we see it happen, but we don't know what it means.
Mm.
Which implied that there's something else going on there. So
maybe Earth did provided them something or
it could be somebody manipulating something behind the scenes in order to get this attack to happen to help perpetuate some nefarious plot. I don't know.
Yeah, or it could be just as simple as bad spoo pizza delivery or something like that. Yeah, Domino's really
screw
sucked
you guys.
No tip, here's a bombardment.
Yeah. Yeah, they failed to come up with the final episode of Single Female Lawyer, and they did nuke the place.
Right.
Yeah. If Lure isn't going to carry through, we will. All right. And then Nan finishes it up. She says, while I'm asking all these questions, I can't find a map of the station that shows floor numbers. Do the numbers actually go from top to bottom? Why is gray 17 under gray 16? I think it's pretty simple. You number them. Zero level is the core.
Right, towards the middle. It's towards the inner sphere. Yeah.
Right.
Inner cylinder, I guess it would be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the source of, and then you're counting outward from there. So, you know, you're going down.
Do you start at zero or one?
I would start at zero because that's the shaft. That's the core shaft. Nobody
really.
So
the zero is the inside layer of the place.
It's zero. Well, yeah, but not even a layer. You're looking at. You remember in Fall of Night when Sheridan's on the core shuttle and the Centauri leaves the bomb and it blows him out and Kosh has to fly out of his encounter suit and save him on all the rest. The floor, that garden floor, if you will, that's one. It, to me, anyways, the core shuttle is zero. And then underneath that quote-unquote open area, the floor, then you get stuck 2, 3, 4, 5, 6,
okay,
7.
Okay, so the center and everything up to that skin is zero, the middle. And then as you go down, it's 1, 2, 3.
Right,
four.
As you get to the outer hull of the station, those are your higher number decks.
Now, gray sector is all the way back by the reactors, near the reactors, right?
Right, but the colors, I thought the colors were more indicative of longitudinal isn't the right, but it was more a question of, like, blue sector was all the ambassadorial areas. Now, whether that ran longitudinally or I guess not laterally, but, you know, whether that was a horizontal versus a vertical orientation, we don't know.
Yeah.
You know, brown sector, you got the sense was like sewage and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Mr. Cranston and his friends will be very ripe after coming from downtown.
Yeah.
And then Grace.
25 from Uranus. Core.
Oh, please, Fry. That joke got old after they changed the name. You know, so gray always implied to me those sort of maintenance areas, not so much sewage, but you know, electrical plants, power plants,
the recycling system,
right? Yeah, you know, just that kind of the lift systems. You know, the central location for controlling all that and fixing all that.
Yeah. Well, my thought process with the gray sector would be, well, closer, be more, have built up more towards the core and spreading out there just to accommodate all the logistic support equipment there. I mean, so it starts at the core and then goes out from there. So one level out and so on.
I'm sure Summer's got the book that explains it all. Yet another book that I missed somewhere down the line.
I would like to have that manual.
I would like to have the blueprints, or at least one of those cutaway things.
Yeah, right?
There's got to be some fan group out there that did one.
Yeah, I mean, say what you will about Star Trek. They had cool.
Hey, the technical manual for the Enterprise was awesome. The next gen Enterprise?
Yeah, that was one of the coolest things ever.
I also like Mr. Scott's Guide to the Enterprise. I like that way that was set up, and how it explained deck by deck.
Have you read the Star Trek Encyclopedia?
It's been ages since I saw it.
Some of what they did in the technical manual, they carried on in terms of those outside the universe commentaries that they drop.
Right.
They're all fans. There's a couple, 3, 4 different Babylon 5 references scattered in there, which was pretty cool to see. Just, you know, which is more of like, you know, this actor also played that actor on Babylon 5.
Right, yeah.
And that kind of thing, you know. And it's like, hey, that's all right. Anyway. All right, so have we settled that? We've never really settled that question for poor Nan.
Where were we?
Sorry. Grade 17, but we can't determine whether that's above or below grade 16 yet. It doesn't really matter because grade 17 was missing.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, like the 13-4 mini in old skyscrapers.
Right, yeah.
Oh, they just should have had him bring out the big bladed hand and been done with it.
Grade 17 is missing its mom. All right, well, that's it for the emails, and I guess that's it for Feedbackapalooza for this time around.
Yes, we're all the way through them.
For this cycle. So I know in the fullness of time, we will have yet another Feedbackapalooza. And I think if you would like to participate in that Feedbackapalooza, we would love to have you do that. There's a handful of ways to do that. You can send emails to us at babylonpodcast@gmail.com, and I'll get to them and read them like we did for Nan and David. You could leave a message on babylonpodcast.com and make comments on any of the postings for the episodes and whatnot. And who knows, maybe one day I'll get off my lazy tuchus and read some of those too. But there's some good discussions going on there. Don't avoid that. There is the forums over at Farpoint Forums and the ongoing thread that's been going on forever, which I just can't handle anymore because I have a life. Then you can also give us a call, and that's the best bet for getting heard on the Feedbackapaloozas, the voicemails. Break into the Neil hegemony there. He seems to have broken Gary, so Gary, you need to step up your game. We heard last week from John in Jersey, which was the first time in a long time, so John, don't be a stranger. All you other people, you can call us at 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
The year of the great tangents go, ooh, butterflies.
Yes. And hopefully we'll see summer on the other side of the gate.